And everyone, if you haven't gotten acquainted with him, then you can say, well, you know, he's okay. But get acquainted with him. You're going to find out he's even better than okay. He is just one of those men that is, again, I say he's strong enough to cry. A lot of you guys, you know, you don't want anybody to see a cry because you're trying to prove yourself strong. He doesn't have to do that. He just is absolutely what I think is a fantastic human being. And that's George.
Those are tough words to live up to. And also, ever since I've known her, if you ever want to see a true angel or know what one looks like, the lady that just sang is her. She's just really a very special person. I think it comes out in her music. She also stole my thunder. She said more eloquently what I'll be talking about tonight. But anyway, my talk with you tonight, it focuses on something that Reverend Milley first shared with me a couple of months ago that I keep thinking about. Added a few things that have happened to me along the way, but somehow seem related, and this is a subject that I believe holds great possibilities for all of us. Before I begin, though, one little event came up in church on Sunday a few weeks ago that had real meaning for me. There was a mix-up, and one of the ministers who was supposed to speak didn't know about the scheduling. That was no big deal. But for a minute on stage, there was a pause as to what was going to happen next. Then Reverend Milley stepped up to the lectern and off the top of her head gave a beautiful talk about her past, which evolved into an eloquent story about the patterns of life. She never missed a word, never went, never skipped a beat. I know I was paying very close attention. Some of us who haven't been doing this very long sit at our computers and spend more time praying for the right phrases to appear than the entire time of her talk, which goes to show that some of us have it and some of us are still trying to get it. I then began to reflect on the fact that no one is more surprised than I am that I'm even up here. I first came to this church much less than a year ago in a different frame of mind. When I come to this church now, I'm not the same. This church and the people in it have helped me grow immeasurably. Being here gives me a feeling of warmth, love, and hope that is impossible to explain. You walk in the door, your spirit is lifted, your problems disappear. You know in the deepest part of your heart that you're in God's home. And his beloved angel, Reverend Milley, is always here waiting to greet you with total acceptance and love. We're all preconditioned when we walk in here to feel good, aren't we? I mean, inside these walls, life is good. Life is awesome inside these walls. But wait a minute. Wait just a minute. Is this the catch? What about outside? If I feel this good once I get here, do I have to acknowledge that maybe I don't feel as good before I do? What about when we're all going through life's ups and downs, rushing through traffic, listening to our cranky boss or client or child? What about then? Do we feel the same? What about when we get angry or sad or mad or depressed? God, where are you when I really need you? Where are you when I'm angry, alone, hurt, or want to fight with the world? Not long ago, I came out of a business meeting feeling good. Everything went fine. Got into my car and then saw that I'd left a glass of Coke in the console below the dash. But there was something else drowning in there, too. It was my cell phone, which had fallen in and had been there for hours. My day and my cell phone were ruined. Life's little aggravations, the details, make me crazy. But no problem. I recalled that I just got an automatic upgrade from AT&T, a free phone. I decided to go get it. So I drove downtown, where first there was a traffic jam. Then in the parking garage, someone wanted to argue with their car over the fact that we both wanted to park in the same place. All horns were honking. It was just lovely. I was not a happy camper. I was getting really angry. No worry, though. I'm going to go get my phone, be home in an hour. Went into the AT&T store and told the salesperson who said, no, can't help you. We don't keep those phones here. You have to order it online. But you are AT&T. You're telling me that you don't have these phones here in your store? Nope. And he turned around and walked off. God, where are you when I need you? I was furious by now. I started to walk back across the street for my car. Then I see three guys waiting on the corner who look pretty rough. Chains hanging from their belts, no sleeves in their shirts, Harley's parked on the corner, and I'm mad. And I'm ashamed to say this, but I actually thought to myself, come on, please, try and mug me. I was ready to fight. Half of me was scared, knowing that they would kill me, but I didn't care. We were now staring each other down, you know, like real men do, when I saw one of them reach for something. I don't know what that is. I had actually clenched my fist. He moved to pick something up from the ground behind him. I walked closer, angrier than ever. Suddenly, I saw what he had. It was moving. He had picked up his little dog and was holding it in his hands. And when the tough guy picked him up, the dog began to lick his face. I promise you, this is true. As I walked by him, he asked me, "How you doing?" I said, "Okay, how you doing? God, where are you when I really need you?" Well, of course, the answer is, "He is always here, dummy. You're just too angry, too blind, too hurt, too depressed, too wounded," all of which makes you too judgmental to see. This moment was a huge lesson for me, one that I seem to need to keep learning again and again and again. God is always there, isn't she? But sometimes we just can't see. God has been there all my life. Until recently, I never knew. All the times when I needed him, he was there. All the pain that I have endured and sometimes caused others, God was there. But I couldn't see. I was blind, and sometimes I still am. I know that I'm not alone here. I do believe that most of the world doesn't see God day in and day out, if ever on a one-on-one basis. I believe many believe in God on some abstract intellectual level, but I don't believe that most of the world experiences spirit the way we feel spirit inside the walls of this church. Take a look at the 6 o'clock news, killings and mayhem. In the broadcast news business, there's an old adage which comes true every night: if it bleeds, it leads. Then there are the Hollywood starlets shuffling in out of rehab like they are going to a new store at the mall. God, where are we? Or where are you when we need you? We say as Americans, we support our soldiers as they fight our battles overseas for our freedoms. Yet our Christian nation allows 200,000 homeless, including veterans from Vietnam and now Iraq, to sleep under bridges and alleyways. People born into this world with their own distinct sexuality or with a different skin color are treated differently than others. The greatest priority of most every major government in the world is building military might. The civilized world can now annihilate itself 1,000 times over. AIDS is ravaging third world countries and is often in countries where women are treated as less than human. People of one religion want to destroy people of other religions because they know that they are right. A San Ysidro coach is arrested for attacking a player, a child, on the soccer field. All over San Diego, it is against the rules for Pop Warner football teams, children 8 to 15, to shake hands with each other after their games. Fights break out. Parents in the stands join in, starting with those kids whose kids just lost the game. God, where are you when we need you? We're hurting God as a nation, as a people, as a world. A year ago, I would have never said this. It would never have occurred to me. The biggest problem in the world isn't global warming or war or killing in the streets or nuclear bombs. The biggest problem in the world is that we don't all feel God's love in our hearts, nor have we captured the magnificence of God in our imaginations. The biggest problem is that most of us don't feel spirit all the time, if ever. If it were otherwise, who among us doesn't believe that every other one of these immense problems would go away? But I will tell you this. If we can define what the problem is, it sets the stage for the world's biggest opportunity. The question becomes, how do we accomplish something of this magnitude? How do we change the hearts and minds of the world? I believe the solution begins right here in the Declaration of Principles of our church, and it's something quite extraordinary. This is what I had the chance to talk to with Millie a couple of months ago. Man can glean truth from all religions, philosophies, and science. Truth. Yes, truth with a capital P, T. In my mind, that spells God, G-O-D. What we need in the new millennium is a new trinity of science, religion, and secular thought, philosophy, psychology, political science, the social sciences, to find the truth, to help the world know the joy, wonder, healing, love, and interconnectedness of us all through God, so that we all know that we are one. And then when we hurt anyone or anything else, we know that we are hurting ourselves. But George, everybody knows that scientists and philosophers don't believe in God. They're too smart for this. Their great minds, their logic and need for rational thought, their consuming need to see physical proof tells them that this idea is a loser, a flight of fantasy. Oh, really? Let's hear what one rather well-known scientist has to say. The most beautiful and deepest experience a man can have is the sense of the mysterious. It is the underlying principle of religion as well as all serious endeavor in art and science. He who has never had this experience seems to me, if not dead, then at least blind. He also declared, I want to know how God created this world. I am not interested in this or that phenomenon, in the spectrum of this or that element. I want to know his thoughts. The rest are all details. What real scientist has such a romanticized vision of the world? Maybe you've heard of him. His name is Albert Einstein. Let's move on to humanities, philosophy, and the social sciences. Listen to one of the three founders of modern psychology, along with Freud and Alfred Adler. His name is Carl Jung, who died almost 50 years ago. Our main task, he said, is to discover and fulfill our deep innate potential, much as the acorn contains the potential to become the oak, or the caterpillar to become the butterfly. Jung believed that this journey of transformation is at the mystical heart of all religions, that the primary motivating force of every human is spiritual in origin. It is the spiritual self and drives arising from it that create humankind's needs to grow, experiment, and achieve higher levels of purpose and development. If we look to writers and philosophers, there is no end to the kindred spirits who believe in the mystery and wonder of God, like America's own Ralph Waldo Emerson, who weighs quite a stir among Christian fundamentalists with his version of how things are. We live in succession, in division, in parts and particles. Meantime, within man is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty to which every part and particle is equally related, the eternal one. We see the world piece by piece as the sun, the moon, the animal, the tree, but the whole, of which these are shining parts, is the soul. Stated another way, we believe in the endless progression of the human soul, and that illumination and progress result from the outpouring, outworking of the Christ Spirit within us. As you know, this is from the Declaration of Principles of our church. God, where are you when we need you? God is everywhere, once you begin to see what science, philosophy, and religion share in common. But how does this translate into changing lives, changing the mindset for most of the world who do not believe that they are spiritual beings? Here are a few possibilities. Maybe it's already starting to happen. Tuesday night in spiritual development class, I have seen extraordinary things from different times and different dimensions. Impossible? I don't think so now. But maybe we should turn to the study of quantum physics, whose origins began with Einstein, as to what time and space really mean. Does science reinforce religion? Does religion reinforce science? Either way, they both reaffirm that I know that I know that I know. It is the truth, and others can know it too in different ways. How about the field of medicine and healing? In the early 1990s, only three of the 125 medical schools in the United States featured courses in which spirituality was addressed. Currently, some 90 medical schools have courses that examine the correlations between spirituality and health. Scores of studies show that individuals who follow some sort of religious or spiritual path in their lives live longer and have, on average, a lower incidence of disease. There are now more than 200 controlled experiments in humans, plants, animals, and even microbes, which show that compassionate and loving prayers and intentions of one individual can affect another individual at great distances. Everyone who knows them would have to say that this number is now at least 202 when you consider the miracles who are Janie and Lindy, even though they are definitely not scientific experiments. Again, it goes to the belief of psychologist Carl Jung, who believed that spirituality is not our highest calling, but is the path to get us there. This is why we need therapists, counselors, and coaches to work with our dark sides, our shadows, to heal our broken hearts so that when we quit hurting inside, we can be open and free to feel and experience the love of God and each other. It was also Jung who teaches us something else that is very powerful and important. If we cannot love ourselves, we cannot love anyone else. Finally, if you want to take stock of the possibilities of unity through the integration of science, religion, and philosophy, look at the worldwide human, it's called the Genome Project, which became reality in the 90s after 13 years and billions of dollars in research. It is an awesome, awesome human achievement. It lays out the entire DNA blueprint of the 25,000 genes in the human body, who with billions of different possibilities on a computer and movie-sized screen if you want. Scientists, I think, are beginning to cure disease as a result at a rate faster than at any other time in human history. One of the biggest offshoots of this discovery, however, is finding out that everyone on this earth, regardless of race, creed, or color, is 99.9% the same at the genetic level. There is no difference, none. We are all exactly the same. This scientific fact proves the fundamental belief which is supposed to have brought our country together for 200 years, but which most of us at best have given only lip service. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, but among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In the context of modern times, what this really means is this: all men and all women, gay, lesbian, or straight, and all people of all colors, black, brown, white, or red, are created equal and endowed by their Creator. Endowed by their Creator, and is now a scientific fact. Politically, scientifically, and spiritually, we are one. The proof is in. We are the same. God, where are you when we need you? God is everywhere. Each of us is part of God. Everyone in the world needs to see that regardless of which mirror we look in, science, philosophy, or religion, they all reflect back that we are all spiritual beings connected with God. When all 7 billion people on earth see this happen, we as a nation, as a world, will finally unite and recognize what matters above all else. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. Let there be peace on earth, the peace that was meant to be. With God as our Father, united all are we. Let us walk with each other in perfect harmony. Let peace begin with me. Let this be the moment now. With every step I take, let this be my solemn vow, to take each moment and live each moment in peace eternally. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. Thanks.